You don't have to do it on the page.
Oh, okay.
$1. Can you read that in the paper now?
What is it now?
I don't know.
$14,700.
It won't be long before I can.
Oh, we're in that category then.
Okay. We'll call the meeting order, please.
First, this letter will be able to qualify too.
First item on our agenda is House Committee Substitute, Committee Substitute by Senate Bill Number, or Senate Bill Number 564 by the House Finance Committee. And, we've got the bill back to make some technical revisions in it, I guess you could call it. Al, you want to address the committee?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, committee members. On the Senate bill, what went in, there was $4.3 million for my REA areas. And when it came out, I got King Cole was on the House bill, where is it? King Cove got $600,000, and Old Harbor for a gym and multipurpose room and shop fell $1,250,000. And on the Senate bill, there was $4,300,000, and I split it up. But they needed a classroom, and King Cove figures we got on that was $600,000, and for St. George would have been a classroom for a high school room, $450,000. And St. Paul, Port Lines needed a multipurpose room, they need a shop there and a lab and a gym, and that was $1,250,000. Old Harbor was $1,250,000 for the same thing. And St. Paul Island for a classroom was $750,000, which still came to $4,300,000, what was in the original Senate bill. And it was cut down to to the classroom for King Cove and a gym for Old Harbor. Which is $600,000
and $1,250,000.
Was
it St. George in there too? Yeah. It's that's the way it was broken down right there.
It still came to the same amount. It was no, if you look at your Senate bill, the same amount of money is in this one, except it's broken down to spread out a little more for communities would need it. The Senate version was the way they had it wrote up was $3 million for King Cove, and for Old Harbor was $1,300,000. But we start figuring out with the figured out we didn't need all that money there. We could get it spread out to the other communities, REAAs. And I'd ask the committee if I could get that money put back in.
What is the amount that you want put back in?
The only ones was left in is King Cove and Old Harbor. And we had St. George for $450,000. Port Lines for
one. St. George, $450,000.
Yeah. Port Lines for $1,250,000, and St. Paul for $750,000. Old Harbor is still in there for $1,250,000, which would bring it same as the Senate bill of $4,300,000.
King Cove is in there, $600,000.
$600,000.
So your amendment would be total
$4,300,000, same as in the Senate bill that was passed through the Senate.
But your amendment for St. George, Fort Lyon, St. Paul is 2.450, right?
Addition.
That's what I have.
Yeah, yours is broken down.
Yeah, I have it here.
That's $2,450,000?
The total?
No, that's the difference, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, let's see. Told Al that we could, we'd see what we could do to accommodate him. although we've already got the bill up to a fairly high figure. First of all, are there any questions from the committee? On this, I think pretty much we're fairly good.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Al is referring to St. Paul. From the Senate, original Senate bill, I haven't seen the
finding.
How is it?
Mr. Chairman, when this came up, the money what I asked for, they just got it down like that in two lump sums, and I told them we didn't want that. But that's the way they put it in. Then they told me to draw up a paper, which I brought up here, told them how I wanted split up. Like it was for King Cove was $600,000, St. George was $450,000, Fort Lyons was $1,250,000, Old Harbor was $1,250,000, St. Paul was $750,000, which still brought it to the $4.3 million what was in the Senate bill. But the way they put it in there, and I don't know who drafted it up, they just stuck it in two separated.
Now see in your bill there, tell me, King Cove is listed at $3 million.
The original Senate bill?
Yes, as it came over to us.
Oh, okay.
The Senate Committee.
No, there's not. Senate
the Finance Committee, the Senate Finance Substitute.
Okay. I find it.
That plus the Old Harbor one, which is 1.25, comes to 4.25.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's where the
Mr. Chairman and Senate, just get it figured out the way I want it and bring it up here, and you could, you know, take the copy what I made up, so long as it didn't change the amount of dollars in it, because they were already working on it and getting it passed through the Senate. So they said bring it up here and get a copy to everybody, which I did.
You have an extra copy down there that I could have, Al?
No, I got just a copy.
So you got one there?
There should be copies here somewhere.
I think there are, I just lost mine, that's all. So probably all the other members have.
And
Yeah, right here.
Right here, yep.
Thermal balance is 9. 8 is dilution change. 8X is 10. 8, 9, 10. That's 3 zeros on there.
Okay, so any other, both St. George and St. Paul are in REA 9, right?
Right.
Yeah.
That's right.
St. George and St. Paul are in 9. I told you for both of them.
One is,
$1.2 million total.
$450 and $750.
We have any other questions for Al? Already got the bill up to a fairly high number, of course, and if we fund these, we're going to have to find some ways to do it. I think either at the level we are now or possibly reducing it. Does any members of the committee have any motions or recommendations on that?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Guy.
In order to make an effort to accommodate our colleague, I move that an amount of $1.5 million be reduced from REA 4, and if necessary, the amount can be $2 million.
Okay. Is your motion for 1.5 or 2?
The first one is 1.5, and if necessary, you go up to 2.
You got an objection to motion. I'll object to
motion. Favor of the transfer enough to try and push the issue. I think both of those things have changed now, and if the Commissioner of Administration and the Governor both see there would be a definite advantage to having this division more clearly identified with the Governor's office. And the majority of the pros and cons are in favor of it. It's to get more policy direction by the Governor into the preparation of his budget. It moves it up one level from kind of an agency attempting, a department trying to control activities of other departments. You should get some coordination between the planning and the budget office. Quite frankly, right now there's almost none. Just simply because of the difference in the reporting relationships and the roles the two offices view themselves. I think it also would improve the budget as far as state agencies are concerned, because they view it more as if they had truly had a chance to talk to the Governor and get his views in there. And also the budget office would probably feel more comfortable in that they'd have more interaction directly with the Governor. It wouldn't be going through another layer of executive control. And so it seems like you'd get the budget analysts and the people on the review committee and stuff would be dealing directly with the Governor, and his policies would be known more clearly. I guess the biggest reason why some people would say you shouldn't do it is because you may eventually have a lack of continuity. If you ever had a Governor who appointed everybody into the budget office strictly on a political basis, and you were going to have a change in administration, all of those people would be looking for to bail out of there very quickly. You might have a problem when you're going to have one Governor been defeated and another elected. Those people would just be jumping off the ship. But I think that that's a very small problem compared to the advantages that can be derived. The operation of the major functions of the division would not change at all. all of our statutory responsibilities would be transferred to the governor's office by this bill. And our relationships to the legislature and everybody else would remain the same. We have a few small activities now that are just in general assigned to the Department of Administration, such as contract awards, approval of contracts for special services, which would remain with the Department of Administration, probably General Services. But I don't think it would change our relationship with the legislature or anything.
Any questions? Mr. Dawson, do you have any remarks to make?
Really, I guess not. It's basically sums it up. We did, Ron and I went down to Olympia about 10 days ago or so, but the governor basically decided, we thought we might check with another state just to see where we do have the budget office and the governor's office and get their impressions of how it's worked, planning this. And basically they said, they really recommended doing it. Well, I think most states have that situation. Idaho just moved theirs in to the governor's office a year or two ago. Pretty well sums up.
Mm-hmm. Any questions from the committee?
Madam Chair, not exactly a question, but one other area that the committee might consider in this is that, and I'm sure it might be a little difficult for both Ken and Ron to speak on this particular facet of such a move, but another problem with locating budget management in an operating department and still have it review the budget is that obviously it creates conflict of interest situation. It's very difficult for a commissioner of administration as head, as commissioner head of the Division of Budget and Management, to take the same look at budget requests of the Division of Personnel or the Internal Audit or something like this that are his agencies that he can with another operating branch of state government. And this is another very important reason why moving the Division of Budget and Management out of an operating department and into the governor's office proper is a really long overdue change.
Mr. Hunt?
Well, I hear exactly what Jay is saying, and I agree with him. The thing is, why is it necessary to have a bill to do this?
Because the statute specifically says that.
Is that so?
Yeah.
Maybe so.
Yeah, it definitely requires a bill.
Yeah. It'd be just like budget management sitting down and fishing game. They take care of fishing game, but they start to, you can, no matter what department you want to put it in, if it's under a commissioner, naturally his department is going to get some preferential treatment. I think that's just human nature. I don't have any problem with it, but I don't want to dominate any conversation, but I tell you one thing that I'm really concerned about is this program budget that we adopted a few years ago. In my opinion, at least it isn't working, I guess because nobody has really analyzed taking that point to now, any of the things that we thought were going to be accomplished. And they're going to evaluate programs, and they would be dropping the programs, and instead of the legislature, taking myself as an example of all the years I've been here, I haven't seen anything really improved. I've seen a duplication in service. And we were talking about one here just recently, in the last two or three days. We're into a predicament now with Pioneer Homes versus more of a residential senior citizen area. We were talking about last night, I guess, Homemaker Service, and all these things are interrelated. And I think the time is here that we ought to, before we spend any more money, we ought to take this whole thing
and put it into one perspective, and I think we would provide a better service and take care of the needs of what creates of the real problem we have, our senior citizens, and those in the different need, in the need of different types of services. I think that's one thing I'm talking about. I've seen various departments grow like Topsy, and I don't see any more service going out to the people. I'm talking about Fish and Game and Highways. The only thing different is dollar numbers, but growth, and really nothing what the legislature has directed to be accomplished is really being done.
Mr. Chairman, that very subject is the elderly programs is one of the programs that we've earmarked this year. Maybe I could take a minute and explain kind of what we're talking about. Part of the way of evaluating different programs that relate to a similar problem, the problem with now is that they're spread all over the state, different state agencies. So the program budgeting, the first thing it did, of course, is get all those programs in one, all the programs for the elderly, for example, in one bundle somewhere. Okay, that was accomplished by just the legislation. And now the question is, what are we doing with that cluster, is your question. Okay, my response for the elderly programs is that this last year we attempted to look at all the programs for the elderly. The problem we got to was that there wasn't any policy clearly laid out that flows across all of those programs. When you looked at each one, they each were approaching a different, they each were a different knob you turned to do something for the elderly. And they'd all come in over a time period from different, you know, different legislative actions over the years. There was no place we could go to get the policy that we could then fit all these programs into and come up with proposed legislation or whatever. So we decided really the only way we can do it is to get all the people together or representatives of, you know, a small enough group, come up with a recommended policy, get the governor to agree to it, and then the budget can carry out what the policy is.
Wasn't that kind of, the committee can say I'm wrong, but wasn't that what we more or less said, that we were talking about a study on of a statute problem in the Pioneer's home. Well, I don't think that's really the subject of the study. I think the real subject is the three different types of concepts in handling our senior citizens, and I think that ought to be put in one area. The same goes for daycare. You've got daycare and community regional affairs, and you got it in health and social services. And we were suffering quite a bit of concern here last night.
And Chairperson, I'd move that we report House Bill 900 out of committee.
Okay, it has been moved that House Bill 900 be moved out of the committee.
You've got a secretary.
Okay, any objection? How many do passes do we have? Majority do pass. Thank you, Mr. Dawson. Thank you, Lynn. Will you move these offices to? Will you move your offices?
Unless we pass it down this way.
Oh. I just wanted to run that.
Yeah, I'll take care of that.
To come off an executive order, huh?
I almost said that too.
597.
I don't know, I should have put my desk here.
came from.
Do you have Marjorie's bill?
Which one?
And the one you have?
Yeah, I know, man. Can you start them?
Yeah, you can.
Oh, well, we did.
597? That's right.
Okay, House Bill 597.
Okay, Madam Chairman, the Department of Revenue had requested that we hold this bill for a while until they determine what the mill rate should be for FY 1977 or for this tax year, 1977. Since then, they have determined that 20 mills will do it. And so my recommendation, and the recommendation of the Revenue Sources Subcommittee would be to send the bill out as is, 20 mills. This is the ad valorem reserves tax. And as you know, we set the mill rate every year.
I wonder if Mr. Snowden is seen to testify at this point. Are you testifying?
No, I haven't, I'm not.
Oh, I just wondered.
No, he's looking for something better than that.
Okay, then, the recommendation from the Subcommittee on Revenue. That's Kirkham. What is the wish of the committee?
I move we report out House Bill 597.
Okay, is there any objection?
I object, I'd like to ask a question here, Drew. What happens after tax year 77? What happens to 78?
It dies.
It dies.
And
as it presently stands, Bill, they think, the word that we have as of this week is that the line will proceed on schedule, and if it does, there wouldn't be any need to extend this bill for a further year. So under the terms of the act as it presently stands, it'll die a natural death.
This is.
After this is happened, it won't be.
This is applicable only to those existing non-reserve, reserves?
Yeah. Yeah, only the reserves as to which there's a transportation system. In other words, as to which is a pipeline available.
I move that objection.
Okay. Is there anybody else who wants to object? How many youth classes do we have? Would you like to go ask? Secretary, please, see if you can go first. The next bill is House Senate Bill, I should say, 285, supplement appropriation to Department of Health and Social Services for Alaska Retired Citizens Association. Senate Bill 285.
Madam Chairman, this bill, I meant to sort of sign me. And Mr. Vernon, I mean, Mr. Barker was going to, or Jay Hogan was going to help me fix up the committee substitute. And unfortunately, Mr. Hogan was sick until the day, and Mr. Barker was tied up with the Subcommittee on the budget. And I haven't had a chance to do anything about it, and I appreciate it if we could take this one up later on. This was incidentally, we were going to put in an extra request for Anchorage Hope Center and some
sum for the Fairbanks Rehabilitation Association, and also put the funds for the Coxsackie Home in there.
Okay, if there's no objection, we will defer consideration of Senate Bill 285 until Mr. Cooper has made his recommendation. House Bill 871 relating to the number of Superior District Court judges. Provided for effective date. We have Mr. Snowden, I think, who wish to testify. Mr. Snowden?
Madam Chairman, Representative Malone asked me to be here in case there are any specific questions on this bill or I think the next bill, House Bill 774, which also relates to the courts and magistrates. The only comment I had on the original version of this bill is that the district court number of district court judges as listed when it came up here was wrong. The bill was drawn a long time ago and the old statute, and it said the old statute basically says that the legislature sets the number of district court judges, but the Supreme Court can add or decrease, and these numbers haven't changed in years. And I did ask Chairman Malone if he could amend that bill to put in the correct numbers, and he said he would. I don't know if the correct numbers have been inserted on the district court judges.
May I see it? No, this is the old numbers. The new numbers would be in the first judicial district would be 4. And the second judicial district is correct. The third judicial district would be 8, and the fourth judicial district would be 4. Those are the numbers that presently exist. That's just a housekeeping amendment.
Other than that, I would be prepared to answer any questions the committee might have.
What are we doing in the bill then?
The bill would, upon the retirement of District Court Judge Nora Gwynn, provide for a Superior Court judgeship in Bethel to replace the District Court judgeship. The theory behind that, of course, is that it would be less expensive for the state to have a Superior Court judge because it would cut out a lot of travel from Anchorage back and forth to Bethel and an additional per diem. Would also save about 25% of Superior Court judges' time out of Anchorage and would provide Bethel with a judge of full jurisdiction to hear all the cases of that community and to be aware of all the problems that exist in that community. It is my understanding that the residents of Bethel support this bill.
The figures here don't quite agree with the figure on line 18. I mean, on line 11.
Line 11 is Superior Court, and the figures on below is District Court. It's just
okay. I mean, the number of judges.
Right. The 18 judges here are Superior Court judges, and the 17 judges here are District Court judges. They're talking about different people.
Mr. Snowden, now what you're saying now then is that there are now 4 judicial district judges in the first judicial district and so on.
That is correct. That is correct. And the reason I'm leaving the number at 4 in the fourth judicial district, I'm sure you're all aware of. When Nora retires, there would only be 3 district court judges in that district. But I'm leaving it 4 because Nora probably won't retire until January. It makes no difference. The bill doesn't require almost any funding, because Nora won't retire until January, and then we'll just need funding for a half year of the Superior Court judge's time, which is about $3,500. And more than that will be saved, we believe, in efficiency and in travel. And if the committee even wished to pass the bill out without a fiscal note, I could probably, if I can allow, I don't know if I can switch that money over, I could say I could take the travel money I'd save and switch it over. In other words, it's not a bill that's going to cost a lot of money, but it'll provide a great deal of extra service to the city of Bethel and the surrounding region.
You're saying then that there is funds?
Yeah, I would save the funds in travel and per diem that I'm now paying now for a judge to go from Anchorage to go to Bethel, and I would save those funds, and I wanted to let this committee know that.
Okay, so the fiscal note would be zero.
As long as I could switch those travel funds into personal services, it would be. I would guess, yeah.
Do you have to go through a budget and audit?
I think we did put in a fiscal note for about $3,000. My thought is that I would, whatever the fiscal note is, I'd like it passed, and then you can reduce my travel budget by an appropriate amount, just to make sure there's no confusion as to whether I can do that. I know we did submit one to Representative Moore. I'll talk to Representative Moore.
Do you know exactly how much a fiscal note was that you have to
represent? The only fiscal note difference would be a half year of Superior Court judge's time, which would be approximately $3,500, plus the extra retirement benefits, which I had no idea what they would be, but it would be de minimis. It would be practically nothing. My feeling is if you don't want to appropriate extra money, I can find it in my budget, because I'm going to have extra money in travel that I'm going to save. My only question was, I don't know if I have the authority to switch travel funds into personal services.
Only between appropriations. And it doesn't take effect until 1 July anyway.
Any questions from the committee?
Yeah.
Okay, then what's the wish of the committee on this bill?
The way the bill is worded is all right. The only change has to be on the bottom section.
That's a housekeeping amendment that doesn't change any of the effect of the bill.
With the change from 17 to 18 and change from 3 to 4 is good.
That's correct. At the present time, there's another bill in House Judiciary which would allow for a Superior Court judge in Sitka. That bill obviously has the same numbers on the top, 17 and 18, because that's what our present judicial strength is. When that bill, if that bill comes out of Judiciary to Finance and you decide in your wisdom to pass it, that bill would have to be amended to say from 18 to 19 if this passed.
So is there any reason to have Section 2 then in the bill?
It does not. That's just a restatement of the second section of the statute.
There's no reason even to do this.
As far as I'm concerned, you could just change the first part. So a good reason to put Section 2 in the bill would be to clean up the statute that now exists. The statute's erroneous as it now exists. But has absolutely no effect on it.
Madam Chair? Yeah, I'd move that we have drawn the committee substitute and making a change to Section 2, which is no good.
$774 is a cost of living adjustment for magistrates, and I was under the assumption that an amendment was going to be put on that bill to provide retirement credit for service as a deputy magistrate. I don't know if that has been put into the bill.
Have
a bill?
Yes. I don't know.
I got it.
Was there a committee substitute anything, or is not one in here?
Yes, Madam Chairman. The bill is a very straightforward bill. It just provides that the magistrate should be allowed the same percentage cost of living as other state employees. As you know, we have magistrates all over the state, and they're provided a base salary. The Supreme Court really doesn't feel that they don't feel authority is at least strong for them to allow cost of living differentials. This bill would basically say that a magistrate in Kotzebue or Galena or Barrow or anywhere else would get the same cost of living differential as any other state employee that lives in these high cost areas. The cost of this bill, our fiscal note, is about $101,000 to provide the same cost of living that other employees receive in the state. They're the only employees I know that aren't, there are possibly others, but the only employees I know that aren't unionized or anything like that that do not receive the cost of living differential at this time.
We discussed this previously, all
the time. This committee?
Yeah, sometime ago. Any questions for Mr. Snowden?
Yeah. Do you know about George Herman's bill?
Yes, I asked him to submit it. Yeah, the chairman has indicated to me, and I don't like to speak for the chairman, but he's indicated to me that he was going to amend this bill to put in a section saying that judges could count time served as a deputy magistrate in their computation for retirement. There's only one judge in the state of Alaska that would fill that requirement. In other words, you're not opening Pandora's box. It's just Judge Nora Gwynn, who's served faithfully and diligently for a long, long time, and a bill went through some time ago saying that judges get time counted as magistrates, and so another number of judges that used to be called magistrates before got benefit of their time. Well, Nora was called a deputy magistrate, but she did the same darn thing as all the other magistrates, and I don't think this does any injustice, and the amendment I'm presuming that would be added to this bill would give her
668, Senate Bill 668.
Yes, okay. Would be attached.
Okay, any more questions for Mr. Snowden? This bill is talking about salary, this is cost of living. Do you have, I guess in your department, you don't have the position descriptions and a standard salary schedule established for the magistrates?
We do not, Representative. We have it for every other employee, all merit employees. In a quasi-sense, magistrates are considered judicial officers. There is a statute saying the Supreme Court will set their salaries. It doesn't say anything about cost of living. But there is a magistrate advisories committee under the leadership of Justice Jay Rabinowitz looking into this whole question now, setting standards and salary levels.
I'd like to ask another question, Madam Chairman.
Go ahead.
I received a memorandum from the district judge at Nome saying that there was a person somewhere in the court system recommending that magistrates be cut off in various communities in the, I believe, the northwest part of Alaska. What is the status of it now?
There was a
Kiana was one, Norvik was one.
Kind of Norvik, the Supreme Court would stay, no, not Kotzebue.
I mean, Kotzebue was mentioned there. Magistrate's duties in Kotzebue was mentioned in the memorandum. Responsibilities.
it was a long salary study requested by the Supreme Court. The person on the study came back and recommended four different salary levels, but further recommended cost of living differentials, which raises, this is one of the reasons for this bill. Also, it was recommended that there were a number of communities, Buckland being one of them that I remember, that had magistrates that had no cases filed in the whole year, and that these posts should be abandoned. There's no police, no jail, no ordinances, and so on and so forth. The Supreme Court took these recommendations and sent them to the Magistrate Advisories Committee, which has now been formed, and asked them to look into the whole area. It is hoped that the Magistrate Advisory Committee will set policies for rural Alaska and where we should have magistrates, on what criteria, and get a very troublesome area straightened out. There's really no criteria right now for establishing magistrate posts, and one village may get one and one may not, and it doesn't seem fair. We feel there should be firm criteria that everybody realizes exists, and everybody should be treated equally, and that committee is looking into that right now.
Okay, what about those villages? Are they still going to retain their magistrates?
They are, at least until this committee reports back, and then this committee will make recommendations on those areas to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court will make a decision. Now, the magistrate in Norvik has resigned. The magistrate in Kiana is doing an excellent job and will remain. The problem in Norvik is that...
No police.
Well, not only no police, but the village council thought that the magistrate, they didn't need police because they had a magistrate who should be an enforcement officer, and the judiciary does not feel that the magistrate can be a law enforcement officer. There's very much of a conflict of interest there. If it was up to me, I'd talk to the council in Norvik and ask them to put in the village police in the jail, and if they wouldn't do anything, they expected the magistrate to handle law enforcement, I would remove the magistrate. Because the magistrate cannot function as a law enforcement officer.
But the advisory council is looking at the problem?
They're looking at it statewide. And it's composed, I can tell you who's on that council. I think it's a very esteemed group. Justice Rabinowitz, who's always evidenced a great interest in rural Alaska. Bill Timmy, an attorney in rural Alaska, I think around Dillingham, I'm not sure of that. An attorney from Nome, Mr. Larson. Chris Cook from Bethel. District Court Judge Alex Brenner, who is one of the luminaries in the judiciary, very bright young district court judge. Presiding Judge Van Humisen of the 4th Judicial District. That's the committee, and they're calling on the AFN and the magistrates and many other people as advisory groups to them. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Smith. Like I said, we will defer action on this bill, House Bill 779, or 774, I should say. The next bill is Senate Bill 613, amended, Regional Native Housing Authorities.
Yes. Does anything really change the name of what you guys need for the bringing?
This is a House living measure. I think it does, like line 28. Page 1 changes the name of Chugach Native Association and deletes a couple of things there. Changes it to North Pacific Agreement, which is the proper name. No, Corporation, which is the proper name of the Housing Authority of the Chugach Native Region. 613 Senate Bill, SB 613. There is one thing on this bill which is has been brought to my attention. I think that in dealing with these native housing authorities throughout the state, They shouldn't be overlapped with the powers of the municipal or borough governments, like the North Slope Borough has its own powers, which is not at all curtailed by the existence of the Arctic Community Association housing. The same thing with Cook Inlet Native Association, which is within some of it within the municipality of Anchorage and part of the Kenai borough. Put out Senate Bill 613, amended, and unanimous consent has been asked. Any objection? Okay. How many due passes do we have in this bill? Mr. Hogan, it's just to change the name of one of the regional corporations to its legal name, which is North Pacific Rim.
Right, I know all about that. Okay.
Conflict of interest.
Is that a...
There's two, you mentioned North Slope Borough.
That's the association now, it's not the regional corporation.
It's the nonprofit arm.
Yeah, nonprofit.
The other one kind of fell into disuse, and they want to clear up any problems they had or who was in charge.
Okay, how many new passes do we have now?
I get my retainers.
How many new passes do we have?
Two passes.
That completes our series.
Great.
We'll take a short break.
To what? Sir?
And then proceed with the social services.
We are.
Aren't we?
Sure.
I don't care. Except to the
yeah, meeting. I guess we better.
It's up to you. I'm waiting.
We're meeting tonight, aren't we?
Yeah. Yeah, we better. What?
Let's meet at 3 or something.
Well, it's 10:30 now. We want to have a 45-minute break. Please be here on time, though.
We've got on the agenda here Senate Bill number 285. Want to take it up now or not?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Milt is in the process of drawing up a committee substitute, which would should be finished this afternoon, perhaps, so we could take it up briefly tonight or something, because he is doing it.
Okay, well, that's fine. To make it simpler, make sure you get the work done on it. Want to put it on the morning's agenda?
That's fine.
Okay. And, pretty much the same story with the other bill that was on the agenda for this afternoon, that's 774. Clark, do you have a copy of the agenda printed sheet? No.
So, you mean up?
Yeah, not well right here. I thought you meant copy of the city of others. Those education bills that are on tomorrow morning, I've already given a list of most of them. Land out a chance to have them review them. But we've got 601, the Public School Foundation Program, and we got this other one, 599, which is sort of an add-on provision for special reading that I don't really understand. If the guts of the foundation program is basic education, I don't know why we need extra instructional units for basic education, but that's something I want you to take a look at.
Yeah, what I'd like to do, what are we planning this afternoon? I pretty much got some ideas on 601. I haven't looked at 660 or the Senate bill. I'd like to work with her and try to come up with a recommendation. You'll need me here for the rest of the session. And what else we're going to do?
Well,
work it out.
Well, that's all right, I suppose. We've got no social service budget. Are we ready to proceed on that?
You're ready now?
Yeah, well, I want to make these get these bill assignments and so forth out of the way. 423, which is a bill that was assigned to you, and also he'd asked Milt to work up some proposals on a committee substitute, House Bill 423. We might put that out of committee tomorrow morning.
Could you repeat the numbers again?
Well, House Bill 423. Problem with that, Clark, unless sometimes it may object to your absence. I don't know where our minority member is. He's gone off someplace. Why don't you do that? We'll work on the social services budget if Brenda would like to. I think you're going to have to keep looking at this.
I know.
Okay. Pardon?
I agree with you.
Yeah, sure. You're right.
Plugging every minute on this budget.
And if you want to get Mr. Barker, we'll end our bill session then for today and take up these bills tomorrow morning. I'll get copies of a revised agenda for the committee members tomorrow morning. Watercraft, I don't know what that is. House Bill 775 relating to criminal escapes. House Bill 900 transferring budget management. And Senate Bill 526 safety provisions in elevators. I'll call the meeting to order. I made a commitment to Representative Helen Byrne to get this House Bill 897 introduced.
Oh, we just have real poured it out.
Wait a minute. Okay. I haven't even seen that.
There's not much to it. It's equivalent to the amendment. In fact, it is the amendment that was discussed on Senate Bill 476 and House Bill 119 relating to a longevity bonus, providing for the 30-year residency in the state as an eligibility for the longevity bonus. And I would like to send the bill out. We don't have in the file here a fiscal note. Maybe we do in the master file. There is a fiscal note on the bill. It's equivalent to the fiscal note on the amendment. The amendment was 900.
Is it based on any factual math? Or just a one-off yet?
Helen got the first one.
What does this do?
It just says if you've been in the state a total of 30 years, whether the and territory, whether the residency was where the residency was not continuous, you qualify for the longevity bonus.
I move to report out the bill.
Okay, we have a motion to report the bill out.
I object. I made the motion.
Okay, oh, Mr. Haugen moved and asked. Mr. Haugen moves and asks unanimous consent that the bill be reported out of committee. Is there objection to reporting the bill out?
I'm going to vote no rec on it. I'll vote to move it out.
You know, right now I'm asking for a vote to move it out.
Just a second. Are we sure of what we're doing with this thing?
We know not what we're doing.
For sure, one thing, we made a promise to do it.
Yeah, I think that we know what we're doing all right.
Promise made is a debt unpaid.
I know, but wasn't my promise made or my debt unpaid.
Well, you didn't vote against that bill out.
No, I hate to vote against it, but I just wonder, you know, what that means is some guy could have been here in 1910, I guess, for 20 years, left the state, went out and made his wealth down south somewhere. Come back into the state and pick up $100. And I'm wondering, no, he hasn't contributed to the state. He hasn't stayed here and put his life.
Well, 30 years is a pretty good length of time.
Yeah, he could have been here from date of birth until he was 20.
If he worked from 1910 to 1930, we won't have to pay him too much.
No, you're right. But, you know, hypothetical case, he could have been here from 0 to 20, went out and really spent the better part of his life. The part that he could really contribute to the betterment of the state outside the state, then come back in and rip us off. I don't know.
It's reported out.
I agree with you, Jim. You're right.
Okay. Is there objection to reporting the bill out? There's no objection to reporting the bill out. We'll report the bill out of committee. How many due passes do we have on the legislation?
Okay. No, I don't know. I'll wait. That's a tough one. Yeah, I'm kind of unsure.
How come you guys are getting fiscally responsible all at once?
Hey, we've always been fiscally responsible.
Did you vote for this thing when it originally came out?
No.
I had my suspicions.
You make a promise, you know. Now you've got all kinds of obstacle courses yet, you know.
You don't say that. I'm never going to get
the forest warden to take up. The secretary wasn't informed we were going to take this up, and so she has to go and get the bill.
The best argument there is.
Run down right on the board.
No, it's okay. I think this particular
good argument for a bicameral two-house system, huh?
No, it's not.
We can pass this thing and keep our promise and send it to
Well, no. It's an issue that has merit in its own. This is supported by the department in my state.
I got invited to move down to Tucson with my daughter.
You're not going to qualify.
He's here. So I told him, all right, baby, that's fine. You go and I'll stay. Did you spend enough time? I'll tell you what, I went down there the first and only time in my life. You know, we're just like Juno and the top food. You brought it.
Yeah.
Outside
is
one thing in time here.
Grown men and women in a room to lock them up for months at a time from something going on. You thought to get off.
Okay, we have
a.
That's where all the boys are all the
big. I love it.
Okay, we have the regular agenda for this morning. And they're mostly. What's the number of that bill you're interested in?
85.
Supposed to be on here, but it's not. Okay, they're mostly education bills. In fact, they're all education bills. So I'll defer to our subcommittee chairman there.
I
room?
Okay, I'll explain that.
Look, Mr. Chairman, the first one, of course, is 601, and that has a fiscal impact. What it does is raise the rate of funding from 93% to 95%. Fiscal impact of that is $2,100,000. We've got a sheet in front of you that shows the impact of that. Could you hand that out? Yeah, I had an idea of raising it to 97.
No, either 100 or something.
Yeah, that 100% would be probably another $8 million.
Well, that's about 3/4 of a mil. That's all that is.
Let's do it.
It's an idea. That we still don't. 100% isn't enough to fund the REAs, from what I hear. That doesn't do anything for the REAs, which are already at 100%.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, they get enough pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm all for raising it to 100%, and then we could stop worrying about the money you said before and all that.
One question on that, Steve. If in the course of the legislature that thing, that bill gets raised above 20 bills, them guys got the ready cash to work with?
Depends on how much they know.
They could probably stand 10 or 20 million.
Yeah.
They probably couldn't stand 50 or 100
million. Yeah, that's kind of the thing. Because as we keep saying, there's a line in there somewhere.
I know they went, they're already borrowing to pay those taxes now.
Yeah, they are.
All they got to do is raise the gas price at the pump, you know.
Well, they need the immediate cash by June 30, so.
Nothing wrong with that.
They'd have to take it out of their checking account and go back and pick up a little.
See, how would you figure the.
Oh, I think we ought to do that.
Yeah.
No kidding, I don't think we ought to do that at all.
The Senate has been wrestling with all sorts of combinations, and going to 95, raising the basic unit to 26,000 for 77, changing the ADM counts so you get the minimum number of units or smaller schools, and then they're also wrestling with a formula to give grants for utility costs which exceed a certain percentage of the total school cost.
Well, you've got it in this bill, haven't you?
That proposed thing that you have in front of you, I wanted to ask Nat what the where the last provision on page 2 would be workable, and what your views are on addressing that problem.
Just section 5.
Well, why don't you just go through the proposed?
Okay.
People comment on it. Y'all have a copy of the proposal.
The section 1 is the same as the bill you're just speaking of, with $2.1 million, which is raised. The 93% to 95% on the floor and also on the average state support. And that, as you said, cost $2.1 million. That's section 1 and section 2 combined, because all 1 and 2 do are change the percentage from 93% to 95% and put the floor at 95% instead of 93%. Section 3 would address itself to elementary school with an ADM of under 21 and would be allowed no fewer instructional units than 3. This is something we've been looking at for several years, and while this is not something provided by the Department of Education, I'm hastening to point that out at this point. The best we could determine 2 or 3 years ago was if you were going to actually make a small school, small elementary school, self-sufficient, a separate building, you'd take about 3 instructional units. That was based on some analysis that's almost 3 years old. That's the best information we have to make them self-sufficient. Now, what's happening now in practical sense is that the smaller schools and larger schools that can gain some efficiency, funds are being shifted somewhat from what they would get on a straight formula basis over to take care of these smaller schools. I think a good example, well, it used to be, I don't know where it still is or not, but Moose Pass on McKenna was a rather costly school, didn't generate the kind of funds to run it, but of course Kenai proper generated more and you could shift them over. This is true in any borough school district. They're shifting dollars that don't all go right after, you know, follow the pupil. So that's pretty much what Section 3 would do. Now, Section 3 costs a considerable amount of money when you get down to finally analyzing it, primarily because there are so many of these schools in the regional educational attendance areas. I think if you dealt with those schools at all, you know there are a massive number of them that are small, fewer than 30 students, fewer than 20 students, and they would, they're just simply not drawing out of the form of the money it takes that's being put back in them. The other part of it, of course, is the 4 instructional units for a minimum size secondary school. This, we have no basic data to back up, except that we're working on the small, the curriculum requirements that we're looking at for small secondary school. We don't see how you could run one for fewer than 4 instructors. So that's Section 3, and Section 3 would be estimated to cost about $3.8
million. How much?
$3.8 million. Section 4.
Will you please elaborate the last sentence? Section 4, special education and vocational units.
Special education and vocational units will be an addition to the above minimum. That means that if they have special education or vocational education programs, then those separate formulas will be applied over and above these minimums we're speaking of here. So if they had a special education program, say for 1 unit, the small elementary school would get 3 plus 1 or 4 units. In other words, these will be over and above. Of course, the law now calls for counting them separately. We put it in here so there'd be no question that they would be counted over and above the minimum.
Right. You have an estimated cost, total cost for this?
Well, yes, $3.8
million. It's the whole thing altogether.
You want that number all at once, huh?
it gets
a little phenomenal if you want the number all at once.
Okay.
I'd say it's in excess of $13 million at this point, and then we'll add it up a little more specifically later. Again, I'd like to point out that, you know, if anybody views this as a bill supported by the Department of Education, please consider my presence here only to explain the bill. It is not an official position of the Department of Education. I also have it in writing. Not against this particular bill, but there's another one that's not too dissimilar on the other, in the other house. We have indicated some of our feelings about now what we should be looking at and what maybe we should be studying in more depth before we make a decision.
Well, is that your comments? Do those comments address to Section 3 as well?
Section 3 is, yes, those comments are addressed to Section 3.
What kind of study are you talking about?
Well, first of all, we have no site cost data for the small schools in the regional educational attendance area. It's never been done before. This is the first year we'll have a site-by-site data on cost. And while I said 3 years ago, we took some specific sites and tried to determine as best we could the cost of those sites and how many instructional units it would take to cover them.
That's the best data we have. It's 3 years old, and we're not willing to say today that data is accurate. But we did provide, I worked with whomever may have put this together. I know I worked with some people, so I'm assuming that's what happened. I don't know what happened after they left. But that's based on our best thinking 3 years ago. So today, I don't think we're in a position to say that would be accurate. Again, we would say, you know, these kinds of things, we fully believe there are problems. We fully believe there are inequities. We're not in any position to estimate what those inequities are. Right? We're saying we actually need that study we've been pushing for a couple of years.
That's the bill for the $35,000?
That's right.
Can't you do it in the house?
They are, you are.
Yeah, that's, I gave Representative Greening, I think $30,000 or $35,000. The governor, I believe, has amended his budget for $35,000. However, I think it does have a proviso that some money be contracted to the Center for Northern Educational Research, and I'm not sure how you want to view that part of it. I'm sure you've looked at it in the budget process.
Okay, what are your comments on Section 4?
Now, Section 4 is the approach that's shown in Section 4 is the only approach that will provide additional revenues to all the school districts, all the REAAs, and we'll do it on a uniform percentage increase basis. In other words, that kind of approach is the only one that will cover everybody, and we'll do it on somewhat of a uniform increase basis. That cost of Section 4, adding $1,000, I believe you, well, you don't have all of it here. What you have on the sheet that's passed out to you are the city and borough school districts and the...
I have another...
Oh, okay. Okay, the total cost's in there. It's just that this one's been marked and we've made some changes been made on it. $6.3 million. It's on that sheet, but it's been marked out. It does not contain some contract schools in Anchorage, so it would be $6.5 million total for that one. Yeah, if you'll notice that 25 to 26 increase Senate Bill 610, the original Senate bill. Our type numbers were $6,306,200, and as I glance through here, we have included the REAA schools, but we have not included some special education contract schools that we have. And there's probably another 50 instructional units in those. We're running with Anchorage. The state requires, state has a responsibility for them. We're contracting through Anchorage to run.
Well, I'm not sure. How did you arrive? Oh, what is the $4,778,000 represent there? Is that?
That's what would appear to me to be just the city and borough school district. I think if you took the 1,527 away from the 6 million, it would be just the city and borough school district listed above the REAA schools.
Okay.
Okay, that's Section 4. Section 5. Depending on how you interpret Section 5, under one interpretation, I think it makes no sense whatsoever. I mean, if you interpret that you'll do such a good job in estimating the cost of education next year that the appropriations will be exactly correct, there will be no money left over, for Section 5 costs nothing. Also does nobody any good. So a more practical approach, I think, is to try to determine what Section 5 would cost if the funds were available. And that is estimated at about $900,000.
Why don't you explain why how did you estimate that? I never...
Well, what we have done, see, this says electrical power, water and electrical power in excess of 6%. So what we have done is, first of all, we took a look to see from the audits of the school districts about what they were paying for electrical power, and water. And that averaged somewhere around 4.5%, as I recall. Okay, given some variables here and there and say, okay, another percent and a half is not going to break anybody, we simply said, well, pick a figure, 6%. That allows for some differentiation from the average. So if it exceeds 6%, then it's outside the normal range and ought to be subsidized. That's, you know,
is that 6% of the operational cost of the school?
6% of the operational cost of the school. Or 6% of the total cost of the school, excluding capital outlay and debt service.
It's 6% of the total budget, excluding those two.
Excluding those two, yes. If it exceeds 6%, but that happens mostly in the regional educational attendance areas and a few of the small school districts, Selwick being one, Nome being another one, North Slope being the third one, and I guess St. Mary's one.
Nome, they buy their goddamn generator. We don't give them any more money.
Well, I think the department's... What is the department approach to the, you know, the utility costs in the area? What are they suggesting, if anything?
And well, I'd rather speak to, we have a position on, I guess, the total picture. I'd rather start with that. We would recommend that whatever the legislature does, it do something that approximates an increase that would cover anticipated inflation. As we look at that, talk to the people in the Division of Personnel, look at some of their projections, they're saying, okay, we're negotiating, you know, 9%, if cost of living goes beyond that, then we do some sort of adjustment. So we've said somewhere between 8% and 10% would be a fair guesstimate. The inflation factor during the period of time that this 77 school year. That's, you know, open to argument, but that's the basis that we said. Then what would it take to raise over, let's say there have been no changes starting from FY76, no changes at all, to whatever changes it would take. Okay, in 76 we're at 93% floor, 93% average, we're at 23.5 on the instructional unit. So we started from that point. Now we know that legislation has already increased that to 25,000, but that becomes effective next year, next fiscal year. So we started and looked at what would happen. First of all, what is already built into the law? What will the 1,500 increase do for each one of the school districts in the REAA? And the answer there is that between 6% and 8%, you know, low of 6, high of 8% increase is provided through that mechanism. Already in law. Then we said, what would 1,000, since we had 1,000 to deal with anyway and had to figure, what would 1,000 on the instructional unit do? And that runs about 4%, give or take a little. So we're looking then at a spread of 10 to 12% if you do just that. We backed up and said, well, if you take 500 on the instructional unit, and if you take 500 on the instructional unit, the percentage increase pretty much uniformly, within a give or take a couple of percentage points across all the districts, the REAAs will be 8 to 10%. In other words, that low 8, high 10, right in that ballpark. And what we've recommended is that these kinds of things be consideration at the present time, because we've got data, we know what those impacts are, we know what, you know, on what basis that money is there, and if it is a hedge against inflation. We do recognize, and I think we'd be more willing than anybody else to say there are problems with the electrical costs, safe water costs. There's been I don't know whether you would call it a subsidy or what, but education has had a phenomenal charge placed upon it as far as the EVEC costs are concerned. It may be no subsidy whatsoever taken over the whole state over what used to be SOS. Probably a pretty good deal, but when you break it out and you have one small REAA with 10 AVEC schools with 15, 20, 30 students in them and paying $33,000 each, you've got quite an impact on that region. We know that. We just don't know what approach to take and what the magnitude of the dollar should be. So the only thing we could recommend at this point, and without doing any study, would be something similar to the last section. And that's not our recommendation, but it would be something that said, okay, if the average cost is a certain percentage, then anything above, say, percent and a half or so above that ought to be subsidized. And that's a very gross kind of cut, but it's one that would be fairly appropriate if you don't know any better.
What about not doing anything this session? And do you plan to, you know, follow this problem up and have something by next session?
We have recommended that what you're actually getting around to is that we do nothing in terms this session in terms of changing the law. We see two possibilities from that point. There's a degree of discomfort, you know, let's face it. How many 50 of you people are going back to the voters again, I believe. Okay, there is a degree of discomfort among some of the advocates for getting something into law now because, quite frankly, I think we may have the votes to do it. Be very candid about that. And it may be that something has to be done to satisfy those people. We don't feel that discomfort, you know, we don't have that kind of discomfort from the Department of Education point of view, and it would be fine with us to wait another year when we could come back to you after we've done a study and say these things are needed, and we feel comfortable there'd be a supplemental available for it. And that's the approach we've recommended. However, if it should take another approach, the next best recommendation we could come up with would be some sort of contingency fund spelled out. What do you use these dollars for? And you only use them, you know, something similar to the last section of this bill. If there's small school districts, small schools, or whatever. Those have been our recommendations. The first recommendation would be that that in fact, we go ahead with this study and we come back and report by the end of the first to the second month of the next legislative session and give you some information about how much it would cost and much better information about what the problems are and how they can be solved. With the hope that the supplemental would be appropriated if it's critical and could be used and could be distributed during the next fiscal year. That was our recommendation. That recommendation did not, I'd say, come under a great deal of favor. It wasn't snapped up on the in the other house. I think they might be thinking about it, but it wasn't really. The alternative being that, okay, suppose we set up a separate appropriation without writing anything into the legislation, but appropriating an amount of money from which you address these problems. So therefore, there is an assurance that it'll be there, and you don't have to depend on supplemental. So. That's pretty much where we stand, and it's a sort of a tenuous situation. If we say much against anything, it appears as if we're against education, and of course being the Department of Education, that's not a position to take. But we're trying to be very candid in this thing and not particularly appear to be opposed to education or to rural schools or to having ABEC serve as a way to provide electricity. We're not fighting any of these things. We believe there are problems there. But we're simply in no position to make a recommendation.
What kind of contingency fund would we be talking about?
It looks to me like it'd be between $3 and $4 million, the way they were talking over in the Senate side.
What do you know right now, or what's the idea? Does anyone have any idea of how many districts would be affected by this?
Which one? Section 5?
The last part of this proposed bill.
I would say a maximum of 6, and we don't really know because we're using 1975 audits at this point.
And what what sort of percentages over 6% would we be talking about?
Well, I think the highest one we found was 9% among the districts, again, on 75 data, and probably around Well, Kennedy's got up considerably higher in the REAAs. I don't recall, but it might be as high as 18-24%.
One thing, although I think pretty much everybody here is in favor of funding education, occurs to me, if you, Clark, if you set a limit, whatever it is, 3%, 6%, X percent, and those costs are above that, and you're subsidizing the additional costs and special funds at 100%, there's no trade-offs left. You might as well run those up to 40% at that point, if, you know.
I'm not really, it's not my view anyway that we should try to tackle this problem. I think there's a lot to be, a lot of data that has to be gathered, but I threw this thing out so you could see the potential problems that we'll be facing, if not this session, next legislature.
Well, the answer is, you know, how severely does this particular question impact any of the different districts or REAAs? Will we be able to conduct an educational program?
I take it from your remarks feel that they can, at least most of them can, but something probably is going to have to be done next session for that current fiscal year.
I don't believe there will be a major crunch occur anywhere until after the next legislative session is well underway, and we'll know a lot more than we know now about what would be appropriate in terms of adjustments. Because there's a considerable amount of money going out there already. They're running schools this year, and while there are some real crutches, you know, we haven't seen anybody even considering that they're going to belly up or that there are going to be all sorts of problems. We know there will be some adjustments to make. That's why we wrote in Chapter 124 that the debts would fall to the state. But this gives us this year to get some data in, because we never had any basis for data before. And until we have that, there's no way we can make recommendations.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Ernie.
You know, you've heard me make the statement about 100% state support for education in the foundation. Number one, the foundation formula is based on the 22 to an instructional unit, isn't it? Or 25?
Well, it varies. Small schools based on 18 after you pass a certain number, and on larger schools based on 19, and then
nowhere through the entire system does the state average come up to anywhere close to that. I figured it out. But as long as you're going to make this study, if this is what's going to happen, include in that study the percentage that it will take to fund 100% of education in the taxpaying area of the state. In other words, for instance, I see Juneau's looking at their taxpayers are about $2.5-3 million right now, based on the 93, is that what our formula is now, 95? Just figured out, what does it take, 106, 108%, something like that, you know? I'll tell you, people are getting damn good and mad, you know, about what's going on here. When you got to dig out of your pocket, my taxes, my house went up from $70,000 to $92,000 this year. Because of the increased cost in education. And believe me, there's going to be some excitement around here when this thing all comes to a head.
It's one approach we
have. Damn well know it. And it's going to be that way too, because people are getting to understand what it means.
Nat, you said, you know, The
education budget will be, about $560
million.
That early.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you damn well know it.
You know, taxes 70...
on the cannery went up about $270,000 in one crack. You don't understand what it's all about until you have to pay for it either.
Thank you.
Incidentally, Larry, I agree with you. We probably, got to approach 100%. Then you got to say to the districts,
I'll make a study. I can figure these things out. I'll show you what it costs.
Yeah, the other side of the double-edged sword of 100%, of course, is that you have to save, and that's as far as you go.
Well, I ain't gonna talk right now, 100% unless I talk about relate that study to the would make it a true 100%.
But it means that the districts can't raise taxes, then, or at least, I mean, you're saying that they have to.
The state will take the complete cost of education right out of the state general fund, and the school board will write out their budget based on whatever the state criteria is on an instructional
unit.
They'll
have to do it that way. If they don't,
It isn't fair.
You can't work.
Yeah, well, that's my point. Yeah,
there would have to be a lid written into the law.
Well, there has to be some formula or something, because otherwise,
simply say you don't exceed this by more than a percentage.
Dick Orr and I figured out this original one. And about 90%+ of all the instruction unit goes to teacher salaries, you know. And then they put on and